The topic is that mankind should not invest in the exploration of space. Hello, my name is Nicole Montes, and I am the team captain for Space Invaders, in which we are in agreement with the topic that mankind should not invest in the exploration of space. My team members are Kat, Alexa, and Priscilla, who will be discussing why mankind should not invest in the exploration of space. In this debate, the evidence will reveal the reality of space exploration and its negative effects to our home we call Earth. I ask the listeners to please open your heart and your minds to the truth, where the evidence will prove why space exploration harms the world we live in today and why it is a wrong investment to our future. To the naive person, space exploration sounds like a great idea, and one begins to question why our group, the Space Invaders, is even claiming that mankind should not invest in space exploration. You may even have a biased opinion of your view of space exploration, believing that there is nothing wrong in investing our money and resources to further humans' curiosity in its quest for knowledge. Don't get us wrong. We know that mankind has made many achievements in space. Through space exploration, we have been able to circle the Earth, reach the Moon, and explore distant planets. We can determine at what time and place a solar eclipse will take place, or when the next comet will pass through our skies. In 1989 marked the 20th anniversary of man's first landing on the Moon, where President George Bush announced the new Space Exploration Initiative. There was a great sense of promise in the air as the president spoke of a new continuing course to the Moon and Mars and beyond. Unlike the 1960s, space race between the United States and Russia, which was part of the larger conflict of the Cold War, the Space Exploration Initiative was to be an opportunity. The president said a choice, not a necessity. In reality, the plans for Space Exploration Initiative proved to be too costly, and the president abandoned his proposal, fizzling out any dreams of continuing. In 2004, former President Bush has announced another program of space exploration that will focus on Mars, using robots and ultimately to find life on other planets. NASA's funding through the year 2020 is anticipated to cost $271 billion. But our group poses the question, at what cost does space exploration take on our planet, our resources, that we solely depend on, and ultimately human lives? Imagine with me a parent somewhere amongst the billions of people in the world. Imagine this parent holding their child's frail body in his arms, crying out, embarrassed, for some type of help to relieve their little one's suffering, hunger, and pain. Imagine this parent looking down at their child and realizing that it's too late to relieve any of his or her suffering, because this little one has already passed away. It is only a few who humble themselves to look down at this parent, and the small bit that they gave wasn't enough to sustain life. The majority of those who passed this parent and the child kept their eyes high, looking upward, keeping themselves out of position with the ability to help. Unfortunately, this is not a figment of our imaginations. This is not just a story. This is reality. This is the world we live in today, where most of us keeps our eyes to the skies without looking down at the problems around us. The reality is that this story occurs every day. 40,000 children die under the age of 5 from malnutrition and disease that are preventable. Is this all preventable? Yes. So then why do not we choose to prevent a child's death? Could it be the cost of preventing this? It is estimated to be only $2.5 billion a year to provide low-cost solutions to all children's health problems. $2.5 billion is spent in U.S. tobacco companies, or $2.5 billion is spent in vodka in the Soviet Union. It's only 2% of the world's military spending in one day. There are those who believe that answers to our world's problems of overpopulation and malnutrition are going to be found by colonizing other planets and future generations, running away from our Earth, our home, and our problems. There are those who choose to escape the reality of what is around them and look to what is currently a fantasy to live somewhere far off, not dealing with the issue at hand. It has been said that the courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the belief that something is more important than fear. Is it that those who run do not have the courage to face the issues in here and now? Or is that they have decided that the lives of children, of men and women, just like us, are not important enough to face the fear of our predicaments here on our planet? It is our belief that the lives and well-being of our brethren, both men and women, are valuable, and to combat these issues in education and awareness is key to resolving the problems that plague the world. The spending of billions of dollars to find signs of life on other planets in hopes of solving problems we have on Earth will not solve the problems of overpopulation, malnutrition, and homelessness. Unfortunately, this is the reality of the world's circumstances today, where those with the ability to act to look down and give the aid necessary to prevent the millions of lives lost each day due to our neglect.
Hello, my name is Alma Bravo, and I am the team captain for the team called Columbia. And my teammates are Julie, Alex, and Jessica. And we are going to present the negative side of this debate. We are presenting scientific evidence on how space exploration has positively benefited us today and will and can continue to benefit us in the future. The year was 1643. Evangelista Torticelli, an assistant of Galileo, poured some mercury into a glass tube and he put his thumb over one end. Then he tried to pour the mercury out, but it wouldn't come. A little void had formed between his thumb and the mercury. Somehow, it held the heavy liquid in place. It might be said that Torticelli's discovery of the vacuum marked the beginning of space research, but there are many aspects of space that can't be mimicked on Earth. We can turn down air pressure in laboratory vacuum chambers and bombard samples with space-like radiation. We can turn off gravity, though we can't turn off gravity, or look down on Earth from above. It says there, these are some of the reasons why going into space is essential. In 1926, Roberto Goddard launched the first liquid-fueled rocket. Before this, I'm sure that there are many other experiments with rockets, but this was the first reported. Then Yuri Gagarin, the first human to orbit, ventured into outer space on April 12, 1961. Just 23 days later, Mercury astronaut Alan Shepard became the first American in space. Shepard traveled less than one orbit 9 months before John Glenn carried the U.S. flag for three orbits on February 20th, 1962. It all started with rockets, then artificial satellites, then Russians sent a dog into outer space, and then they were brave enough to send a human. Now there are communication satellites, weather satellites, and human-manned space missions all over space. Automated space probes and human space flights have provided the wealth of scientific data on the nature and the origin of the solar system and the universe. Although studies from Earth using optical and radio telescopes have accumulated much of the data of the nature of celestial bodies, it was not until after World War II that development of powerful rockets made direct space exploration a technology. Every day, in a variety of ways, American lives are touched by space technology. Since 1976, about 1,400 documented NASA technologies have benefited the U.S. industries, improving the quality of life, and have created jobs for Americans. The Apollo program has helped change the way of life in America, especially in healthcare. I will mention some of these contributions that will later be discussed by my teammates. Improvement of athletic shoes, cordless power tools, cool suits for race car drivers, CAT scanners, MRI technologies, and even improvement in hospital food services. Where would we be now, and how would we be living on Earth if brave souls like Yuri Gagarin in the past would not have ventured into the unknown or have even questioned what is in space and actually gone out there? Would we have cell phones, cable, or other handy tools that we use on a daily basis? How limited would we be today? There are three different points supporting future space explorations that we will elaborate on today. They are the advancements made from past space explorations, the dire need for space explorations to find resources that we could use on Earth, because we are doing a very good job right now of using up all our earthly resources, and the use of space explorations to potentially find space that has life or the ability to sustain life and can be used in the future after the planet Earth's resources are depleted and its inhabitable area has been overpopulated.
Hello, my name is Kat from Space Invaders, and I will be presenting the first argument against space exploration. I have to make it clear that I am not here to prove that there have been no advances in science due to space exploration. yet that they have come at a huge expense. I have to admit that our lives on Earth have benefited by the technologies that space exploration has created for the NASA programs that led to the creation of things such as medical imaging, firefighter equipment, and one of my personal favorites, the invention of the $12 million ballpoint pen. Yes, we are using NASA's inventions, but the cost is unjustifiable. Just think about all the possibilities that $12 million that had been spent on the ballpoint pen could have achieved on Earth. I want you to ask yourselves if NASA's so-called successes are synonymous to the high price tag that is required to achieve them. The amount of money the U.S. has and is considering spending on space is ridiculous. During the first dozen years of its existence, in 1961 to 1973, NASA took the nation from having no space capability to landing humans on the moon. But since then, the manned space program has been stuck in low Earth orbit. 3 decades of stagnation have gone by, resulting in a space program gone adrift, spending huge amounts of money and risking lives. In rightful effect, budget cuts from space exploration have become a normal occurrence. However, the honored and respected President Bush has decided to come up with a new goal, implementing a sustained and, according to Bush, affordable human and robotic program to explore the solar system and beyond. Yet we have to ask ourselves, what exactly is affordable? At what cost is this going to be accomplished? Taking a quick glance into Bush's goals, Bush seems to have good intentions with a robot system being used in space exploration because it is more expensive and a higher risk to perform certain tasks in space with humans. Robots came at an enormous price tag, and it will need large amounts of testing before a safe launch with robots will be possible. The Congressional Budget Office's analysis indicates that NASA's total funding needs through 2020 might be $32 billion greater than NASA's current projection anticipates. An increase of $32 billion would represent a rise of about 12% relative to NASA's total projected funding of $271 billion through 2020. Let's consider another of Bush's goals, the return of NASA to the moon, and what he believes to be an important step for our space program. Bush says that establishing an extended human presence on the moon could vastly reduce the cost of further space exploration, making possible ever more ambitious missions. Why has Bush decided to have NASA's budget increase then? We are looking at a long-term commitment of an obscene amount of money with without secure results. NASA's current 5-year budget is $86 billion, and Bush has called upon Congress to increase NASA's budget by $200 million a year. To build and operate the new Crew Exploration Vehicle will cost a combined of $24 billion through the 2014 fiscal year. The new Saturn V rocket, which can blast 100 metric tons into space, is projected to cost $13 to $16 billion. To support a new moon landing by 2020 in total will cost around $104 billion, with follow-up missions estimated at $2 billion. Americans must come to the realization that the federal government does not have infinite amounts of money to spend. In fact, it has no money, other than the money it has taken out of your paycheck and mine. NASA cost taxpayers $16.2 billion in fiscal 2005, up to $822 million for the 2004, which is piled atop a $7.4 trillion national debt. I have to admit that space exploration is indeed challenging. However, there is no excuse for many of the management mistakes that have given us nearsighted telescopes, misguided space probes, and fiery loss of billions of dollars of hardware with its crews, and most tragically, the squandering of billions of dollars and irreplaceable years. Space agencies claim that they can alleviate the suffering of millions of individuals around the world by funding cures.
Hello, my name is Julie, and I'm a member of Columbia. I'm here to do the rebuttal against Kat's argument. The assumption that space exploration is a high-cost adventure is false.
Kat and her team want you to see the gross cost before the profit has been included in these figures. I'm going to enlighten you about the actual net cost. We as Americans have pioneered our way to be the third richest country in the world per person per the population. We estimate approximately $37,800 per person in the U.S., while countries like Nigeria and Mali only estimate $900 per person. Still, Nigeria and Mali have a space program themselves. Why, you may ask, would a country that poor have a space program? The answer is space programs develop jobs and put money back into the economy. This is done by the ability to advance science and industry. First, I would like to point out that NASA only receives 2.5% of the annual United States budget. Some of you may think that 2.5% is a lot, but NASA does not keep all the money in a giant piggy bank. They are constantly putting it back in the communities by hiring contractors to do space launches, buying new technology produced by private industry, and supporting 17,000 employees who work directly for NASA and hundreds of thousands who work for private contractors. Another big industry linked to space is the cellular service companies. Cellular services are a $100 billion industry with approximately 2 billion cellular customers. This has also brought many jobs and revenue into the United States. With the advancement of wireless technology, space exploration has become a private industry also. I get frustrated when Kat says there are irretrievable costs in space missions. As I argued earlier, space exploration has brought so much to the United States in medical and agricultural advances that every mission is paying back to Americans. You can also see that the problems here on Earth and in our country are not going to be fixed with the 2.5% at That's it. Sorry about that. Okay. Now I would like to begin my argument for the support of space exploration. I would like to argue that in the past, space exploration has led to many advances of sciences on Earth. Therefore, we should keep investing in the program for our future. First, I would like to bring up that space exploration has led to environmental advances. Multispectral scanning is a process used in a satellite that views the Earth through the different spectrums in the electromagnetic wave field. This allows us to obtain images that you cannot see with the naked eye. Skylab, an Earth orbiting space station, was able to use multispectral scanning to collect data for crop forecasting and timber yields. This technology is still used today by many farmers and agencies worldwide. Skylab also allowed us to locate potentially productive land for farming. It can determine the percent of organic growth in areas to determine if there is an ability to sustain crops. It can also help identify groundwater sources in areas where it will be easy to get to the groundwater. This aids in irrigation to the crops and allows wells to be drilled for people living in rural areas. Imaging is used to correlate the effects of urban development and land use changes to the direct correlation of air and water pollution. The imaging can identify the magnitude and types of particles in the air. It can also show how the air pollution is traveling through the atmosphere. In addition, satellite imaging can show mineral and sediment deposits caused by land cover change. This is important in identifying problems due to urbanization. With this imaging and thermal detection, we are also now able to easily monitor global warming effects on glaciers and ice covers. This imaging is so good that we can now track animals with it. It allows scientists to find the migratory patterns and the clusters of habitats they are in. This is also helpful because we can keep count of the number of animals on Earth. This is exceptionally useful in marine life because it is very hard to track whale and other large mammal populations when they are under the water. Another very important argument I would like to bring up is space exploration has led to medical advances. More than 1,300 NASA and other U.S. space technologies have contributed to improving our quality of life. Some of those are image processing used in CAT scanners and MRI technology in hospitals worldwide, came from technology developed to computer-enhance images of the moon. Kidney dialysis machines were developed as a result of a NASA chemical process, and insulin pumps for diabetics were based on technology on the Mars Viking spacecraft. Programmable heart pacemakers were first developed in the 1970s using NASA satellite electrical systems. Fetal heart monitors were developed from technology originally used to measure airflow over aircraft wings. Lastly, surgical probes used to treat brain tumors in children resulted from special lighting technology developed for plant growth experiments on space shuttle missions. Space exploration has also advanced technology for everyday life. Satellite communications are used every day, every second, by almost all the people in the United States. This is how we can use our cell phones and ATM machines. Satellite TV and radio would not be available without space exploration. As humans, we have outgrown our planet and need space exploration to keep advancing. Last, I would like to show what would happen if we ignored space exploration like some countries have. During the tsunami in southern Asia, they did not have the satellite technology and therefore no warnings went out. If they had the satellite ability to warn the countries, maybe most of the 230,000 people would have not died. The United States and many other countries have accepted this technology, and this allows for warnings. It is also used for hurricane imaging. We are given ample time to head for shelter. Without these space images, many more deaths could happen. Space exploration is essential for the safety and well-being of every person in this world. For someone to say it's not worth the money or the few lives to defend humankind from many disasters, I say they are uneducated about what space exploration has done for us. If you are one of those people against space exploration, give up your cell phone and satellite TV and move to a country that doesn't have advantages like the ones I discussed earlier. See how happy you will be then.
Yes, as I said before, satellite technology has, of course, had a beneficial effect on our world. But I stick to my statement that it has come at a too great cost to us in the present. Satellite technology, for example, has cost us our privacy, and GPS has aided terrorism. Terrorists now have enough technology to disrupt and intercept our GPS signals, allowing them to cause tragedies such as the terrorist attack on 9/11. Plus, satellites are largely commercial. They are launched to private companies and are mainly maintained by the profits which they lead to. True, space exploration could never be commercial and requires huge government subsidies. The Voyager mission alone cost just under $1 billion. This money could have much better been spent elsewhere. In this day and age, we still do not know how to cure cancer and so many other diseases, and yet we waste time and money on space exploration. Even a fraction of the space travel budget would make a huge difference in fighting diseases and hunger in the world. We know so little about our planet, and yet we put so much into exploring space and continue destroying Earth. Exploring space is a luxury that we cannot afford. Space exploration has become a waste of our resources, because if we wish to tackle the problems of overpopulation or of the depletion of our resources, we must deal with them on Earth instead of chasing an elusive dream. Once we have addressed the problems we face on Earth, then we will have all the time we want to explore the universe, but not before then.
Hi, my name is Alexa from the Space Invaders team, and I am presenting the second argument on why we should not be going into space. I found some facts that are kind of interesting. 6 million children, 6 million children under the age of 5 die a year because of hunger. 1.2 billion people in the developing countries live on an income of $1 a day or less. 1,437,000 children under the age of 5 died in 2002 from vaccine-preventable diseases. This new program set up by our government with NASA at a cost of $104 billion is a waste of good resources. This plan is only about going to Mars, the moon, and constructing a base space station. It has nothing to do with helping what is going on here on Earth. We could use this money to feed the millions of children that go to bed hungry every night. For those who live on a dollar a day, think how much a dollar means to them. We could give them $10 and it would be half a month's pay. We could spend this money on giving out immunizations to children and not only lowering the death rates now, but pushing us more towards eradication of preventable diseases. You can take all these images. You can imagine all the problems that we have in the world that we could solve by just moving this $104 billion elsewhere. So I'm not going to go into that. Instead, I'm going to talk about the different NASA programs being canceled or delayed to fund this new space program. These programs have a lot more to do with issues we have here on Earth now, and not this idea of searching space for solutions to our problems. The first program being indefinitely postponed is the Terrestrial Planet Finder. This device was being used to find Earth-like planets in our nearby space. Instead, the money is now going into developing the Webb Space Telescope, which will look billions of light years away to hunt for clues to such questions as how matter was distributed following the Big Bang. First of all, how is finding this answer and looking billions of light years away going to help the issues we have here on Earth? Pretty much it's not going to. But if we are looking for things within our reach, like the Terrestrial Planet Finder, this might actually help us to do that one day. Another program being delayed is the Global Precipitation Measurement Mission. This mission studies global precipitation, like rain, snow, and ice. It would allow the precise tracking of rainfall to better understand weather patterns. This would have led to having more knowledge on hurricanes, tornadoes, etc., so we could better track and predict when and where they are going to occur so we can warn people more accurately and timely. It would have also studied the effects of global warming on rainfall patterns to better understand the effects that global warming could have on our agricultural patterns. With our ever-growing population, understand where and how we would be able to grow our food in the future, or finding better areas to start planting would be a tremendous help to alleviate hunger. The next program that has been canceled is the GLORI mission. This mission measures and studies the optical properties of aerosols and the changes of sunlight on the Earth's atmosphere. This program would have led to an understanding of what factors force climate change. This would have allowed us to be able to predict future climates, in addition to being able to make sound, scientifically based economic and policy decisions related to the environment for the future because of this GLORI mission. The last mission I will be talking about is the HYDROS mission, which has been canceled. The HYDROS mission was going to provide the global view of Earth's changing soil moisture and land surface freeze-thaw state. HYDROS observations were going to benefit climate-dependent socio-economic activities like water management and agriculture by extending the capacity to predict regional water availability and seasonal climate. This is just a few of many Earth-friendly programs being canceled or delayed because of the new $104 billion program NASA is setting up. It looks to me like our government and NASA have their priorities wrong. Currently, the only missions coming out of NASA have no reasonable possible outcomes that could help the problems that we have here on Earth. All of these canceled or postponed missions could be doing a lot more for us and our Earth than any of these Moon, Mars, or Infinity and Beyond sort of missions. Why should we be looking so far away for an answer to our problems when our problems are here and with the right amount of attention and money, they can be fixed? This $104 billion could be doing so much more good for us if it weren't being spent on the space exploration.
Hi, I'm Alex. I'm from Team Columbia, and I'm going to be rebutting Alexa's argument. My first argument is that your statistics say that we spend $104 billion a year for NASA, where our statistics say that we only spend $16.3 billion a year for NASA, and only $86 billion over 5 years. That's the current plan. Secondly, the Terrestrial Planet Finder, according to the NASA website, is still in the works. This proposal in January 2004 was proposed by Bush to find an Earth-like planet in search of a new vision for populating space, and has no note of being indefinitely postponed. The Webb Space Telescope, which is also in the works of NASA, is to determine the shape of the universe, to understand the galaxy expansion, and to understand the chemicals and element composition of the universe as it is today, and to understand the energy around dark matter to see if it's at all useful for us today or to possibly benefit us if we're populating in the future. You had also noted in your argument that there are no current missions that are benefiting Earth. Well, in front of me I have a list of 28 missions that are currently in the works that are benefiting Earth, including AQUA, a mission that's trying to understand the cycles of oceans, JASON, which is studying the ocean surface of topography, CLOUDSTAT, which is tracking typical weather radar and can detect clouds and weather patterns across the world at one time. These missions that are currently going have taken over some missions that have been postponed, but however, how many missions do you need measuring the same data?
Space Invaders will be taking a 30-second break to rebut.
No. Oh, no, we're doing a 30-second rebuttal. We're using one of our time cards, I guess, whatever you want
to
call
it. To rebut what you said. There's something that you said.
Yeah.
Can't it be rebutted when...
No, because it's about something
it's
that
about
she said.
Something she just can't
She was saying that, I just wanted to make it clear for everybody that she said that I said that it was $104 billion a year. But this is actually just came out. I'm looking at a news article right now from the Herald Tribune. And it actually talks about the new NASA program that they just started with President Bush that actually is going to, it says, describes plans to return astronauts to the moon in 2018 at a cost of $104 billion. And that is, it's not a year, it's being like a plan now that they're going to be spending $104 billion to do this thing that they want to do to go to the moon and stuff. So.
Like 2018.
Can I
rebut?
No,
I'm
not allowed to say
anything back. Oh, to that. Well,
you can do
your second. So you
want to
do? So.
I have right here President Bush himself in a speech saying, okay, NASA's current 5-year budget is $86 billion. So that's over 5 years. So, but that still doesn't equate to $104 billion.
That's because $104 billion until 2018. Your information is until 2018. It's only over 5 years.
Okay, so 104 over 18 years then.
Okay. 104 over 18
years. It's pretty much just a plan that they're instating now that they're going to be taking away $104 billion of our money to go to this plan to go to the moon.
In the future.
Over a period of 18 years.
Yes.
Okay.
So we need just to.
So then that's all. Okay.
And
then,
okay. Yeah.
Do you guys have anything else to say?
No.
Okay.
Good question.
Okay. So, I'm Alex from Team Columbia, and I will be making the second argument for space exploration. The world uses 320 billion kilowatts of energy a day. That's equal to 22 light bulbs burning nonstop for every person on the planet. And let's face it, fossil fuel is almost gone. Oil will peak in the year 2010, and with the population rising exponentially, once it hits the peak, it's only a matter of times until cars will be on empty, houses will be cold, and TVs will not turn on. And what do we have as our options? There's nuclear power, which revolves around splitting atoms, which is being tested now, but it's highly dangerous on Earth. Hydropower, which is the use of water as electricity, but how many dams will we have to create to get enough energy to power the world, not to mention ruining the ecosystem surrounding the area of the dam. There's wind power, which has had successes in Denmark, creating 20% of their energy, but Denmark is only populated at 5 million, and they are only getting 20% of their power there. What about more populated countries like India with 1 billion, and how much of our remaining land mass will be converted into wind farms? The statistics do not just add up. There's biodiesel fuel, which would mean devoting twice the amount of farmland we have just to create enough fuel to power all the world's vehicles, not noting the room for crops that we need to eat. Space is the final frontier. It's unexplored, it's unknown, and it could be the answer to all of our problems. But more importantly, it's not a political blood war. Resources in space mean economic wealth. Space holds the key to inexhaustible, non-polluting energy supply. The sun, solar energy. The cost of travel in space could be cut drastically if fuel and construction material were actually available in space. That is the key. Space solar power using space-based systems to collect the sun's energy and turn it usable to Earth. In 1998, the Lunar Prospector space probe detected large quantities of water on the moon. Water can make it possible to build a permanent lunar base that would produce rocket fuel for longer space missions. It's obvious that a water supply on the moon would save the unreasonable cost of transporting drinking and washing water from Earth for astronauts. But even more importantly, water can be used as fuel. Water is a non-starter. It doesn't burn. However, when water and oxygen are separated, it can be used as a medium of energy exchange and transport. By creating an excellent fuel for anything, which can be burned much the same way as gas or petrol is today. Even combined chemically with oxygen to produce electricity, what is being tested today is known as a fuel cell. Some other proposed plans is Japan's currently working on a space power plant, which will eventually prove to be a clean post-nuclear supplier enough, which will provide enough energy to supply all of Japan. Such a system would get around the difficulties of solar energy production on Earth, which is basically run by a day and night cycle. It would also be pollutant-free and require construction of only minimal facilities on Earth. Space solar power would send satellites equipped with solar batteries in orbit with solar cells to convert the sun's energy into electricity. Electricity would then be transmitted from these satellites into gigantic antennas on the ground via wireless transmission, such as cell phones are today. Another proposed system in Japan is called a laser energy network, much like the previous plan with solar power batteries. Based satellites, but instead of using waves to transmit the energy would be transformed into laser beams. The laser beams would transmit the energy to an airship, acting as a communication station floating at an altitude of approximately 20 kilometers above the Earth. The electric power would then be transported into ground facilities through a fiber optic system. Japan plans to launch a 1,000 megawatt class space power plant system between the year 2015 and 2050. They've already started all the funding, and technology plans are in the works. But by ending space exploration today, we would have to devote the time to find another way to power those 22 light bulbs per person. And no matter what the end result is, it will not be pretty. It would depend on the destruction of more of the Earth's surface area to find more power sources. At that time, we will have to look at one of the proposed options, and our best is just to look to the skies.
Okay, my name is Alexa, and I'm going to be rebutting Alex's statement. Alex first talked about how we're going to have our oil peak at 2010. That might be true, but she didn't really talk about the other types of fuels that we're going to be using in the near future. We already have the hydrogen-powered cars that they're like pretty much like only some people have them now. They're kind of putting them in production. But then there's also the big thing now is, if you've seen those commercials, is the green fuel that people are actually using now. It's made, it's liquefied petroleum gas, which is a mixture of propane and butane, and it's very clean burning, so it has nothing to do with the atmosphere, so that's a good thing. But it actually would save a Toyota Camry. I looked up and it said a Toyota Camry would save about $2,100 a year in cost for oil. So that is a very good thing that's going on right now, that many cars have it. Okay, then you talked about the things that are going on with Japan and sending things in the solar-powered things into the space. First of all, you talked about how with wind-powered things and solar-powered on Earth, it kind of can only be used during the day, but also when you have a satellite, if you're actually going to be sending something to the Earth, it needs to be turning around. It needs to be turned around all the way to be in front of it. So there is really kind of a time that you need to have certain things set up around the world if you really want to take advantage of that, which will cost a lot of money. Also, when it's being transmitted through the waves or lasers, it must be losing some kind of power. So, lastly, how do we know that these solar-powered things?
My name is Priscilla, and I will be.
Can we have a timeout real quick?
Yeah.
Yeah. Second. How many are there? Hold on.
Yeah. There's two for each group.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
Well, that's your last one. Oh no,
soon. Okay. First one. Okay. The things set up around the world, satellites. And the Earth, are you talking about line of sight? Is that what you're talking about? Like the satellites being able to...
Yeah, like you'd have to set up, because she talked about how it was with solar powered on Earth, it can only be used during the day. Mm-hmm. But with solar, when it's a satellite, mm-hmm. it pretty much can only, if it's on the other side of the world, you can't like get it from there. So you need to set up many things around the Earth.
There's going
to
be 36 satellites.
Well, that's called GPS, yeah. right? It's 24 yeah. satellites it's that beam to one another, yeah. and that's how they get around the whole line of sight thing. So it doesn't have to be, that's how why they do that.
Okay.
Okay, I wanted to say that because that's...
Because that's one of the benefits.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, my name is Priscilla, and I am for the Space Invaders. I will be presenting the topics that is near and dear to our hearts, the portion of the effect on our environment.
I don't know about all of you, but I like the idea that the little planet we call home be preserved as much as possible, since it is the only place that we have now. The main issue presented at this portion of the debate is the effect of space debris from previous launches as well as future ones. Keeping the space surrounding the Earth clear of pollution, debris, and garbage is very important because such debris could cause damage to satellites and space shuttles as they are in orbit. Environmental damage can be caused by the fuels used in space. They need to be reduced so that the amount of plutonium in case of a mishap is not entering into our atmosphere. I'm sorry. Okay. These are all very important issues, since the more that we take off from the planet into orbit increases, the more the debris can cause much damage to many of the shuttles taking off. That's pretty much it. Go ahead.
Okay, so on that note then, Priscilla, I don't know if you're aware of the the Interagency Space Debris Coordination Committee, the IADC, originally sponsored by NASA. Are you familiar with that organization? Okay, well, right now, the U.S. International Space Agency has recognized the threat of debris, and they're cooperating with one another to limit its environmental and health hazards. And essentially what they're doing is this agency has grown to include all major spacefaring nations. The IADC charter includes the coordination and dissemination of remediation research and strategies based on research results being adopted by the worldwide space community. Now, let me explain remediation just for a minute. It takes two courses, okay, protection and mitigation. Protection seeks to shield spacecraft and utilize intelligent design practices to minimize the effects of debris impact, which is the first thing that you discussed. Mitigation takes also two forms. It attempts to prevent debris from being created. Active mitigation techniques include collision avoidance between tracked and maneuverable objects and the intentional reentry of objects over the oceans. Passive techniques include venting residual fuels or pressurized vessels aboard rockets and spacecraft, retaining operational debris, and placing spacecraft into disposal orbits at the end of a mission. While space salvage and retrieval has been looked at, the option is currently too expensive to employ on a regular basis. Okay, the other thing that you talked about, I did not come up with any kind of plutonium, but perchlorate is a big issue right now as far as pollutants go. The EPA in 2002 released a draft report highlighting widespread water contamination of a toxic rocket fuel byproduct known as perchlorate. The report indicates, however, that most of this pollution is coming from U.S. military sites. So the U.S. military is making more missiles and more rockets than we are launching space shuttles. So it's not sufficient to deep six space exploration to get rid of perchlorate. You have to go after the DOD. Okay, I'll stop there.
Good.
Right. Okay. So now my name is Jessica, and I'm going to go ahead and present our third argument, Team Columbia. Okay, argument number three, we should invest in space exploration now because in the event we find life in outer space or the ability to sustain life, it will benefit the human race in the future. Any place discovered during our explorations of space that has life or the ability to sustain life can be used in the future as a place for humans to live and dwell after planet Earth's resources are depleted, as my teammate Alex discussed with you earlier, and its inhabitable area has become effectively overpopulated. The U.S. Census Bureau says now that in 2006 we have roughly just over 6.5 billion people on the Earth. By 2020 we'll have just over 7.5 billion people on the Earth, and by 2050 we'll be the third most populous nation in the world. I broke my supporting evidence into two main categories, evidence that life exists now and potential places that life might exist in the future. Okay, meteorite ALH 84001 was discovered in 1984 in the Allen Hills region of Antarctica. Upon further analysis, it was discovered that it contained abundant polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, which is a family of complex organic molecules which microorganisms break down into when they die. Although it is common on dust grains and other meteorites, the mixture present in ALH84001 suggests a biological origin. Unusual mineral phases were also found in the meteorite. They included carbonate minerals, including manganese, iron carbonate, iron sulfides, magnetite, pyrotite, which form globules of 50 micrometers in diameter. Their diversity in such a small area also suggests a biological origin. Also, evidence of microfossils were found. High-resolution scanning electron microscopy shows tiny ovoids, which may be fossil remnants of tiny bacteria. The Murchison meteorite, found in Murchison, Australia in 1969, and the Murray meteorite, found in Kentucky in 1950, contain polyols, which are sugar and sugar-related compounds. If you're a bio major, you know that this is a component of RNA and DNA, and it provides a source of energy, and forms an essential structural component of the cell membrane. Amino acids are also found in the meteorite. They're the building blocks of proteins, which are present in all life forms. Okay, for my next category here, potential habitable stars. They're referred to as HAB stars. And scientists look for habitable zones, the region around a star that may support life on planets and or areas on planets that may support life. There's three important criteria that they classify HAB stars by. The star's age must be a minimum of 3 billion years, which is old enough for planets to form and complex life to arise. Size and brilliance can be good indicators. Those chosen were small, stable, and dim, with no stars orbiting them. The other is activity. Too much intense flaring could wipe out life on nearby planets. The third is that they must contain a significant amount of metals. The Carnegie Institution instructed the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Institute to turn radio telescopes to five main stars to listen for potential radio signals. Number one was Beta Canem Fennati Coram. Number two was HD10307. Number three was HD211415. Number four was 18 Scropi. Number five was 51 Pegasus. The nearest star is 5 light years away from Earth. NASA's Terrestrial Planet Finder, a TPF project, aims to image Earth-like planets. The Carnegie Institution created a list based solely on the brightness of the star, bright enough to suggest it could support planets with liquid water, but dim enough to not interfere with imaging techniques. The list includes number 1, Epsilon Indi Alpha, number 2, Epsilon Eridani, number 3, Omicron 2 Eridani, number 4, Alpha Centauri Bravo, and number 5, Tau Ceti. My last bit of evidence, Enceladus, Saturn's moon. Images from NASA's Cassini spacecraft indicate that possible pockets of liquid water are below the icy crust. These pockets may be ideal habitats for life forms similar to those found in hydrothermal vents beneath the Earth's oceans. Outer space liquid water geysers similar to Yellowstone's Old Faithful may have unknown heat sources inside the moon which melt ice deposits of subsurface water, and under pressure, these water pockets burst the icy crust. The water freezes once it erupts from the surface. The large amount of frozen particles make the surface of the moon appear very shiny. Water deposits are located at the moon's south pole and may be less than 100 feet underground. Scientists think that sources of the heat, there may be two sources of the heat. One might be a molten core, which sends waves of warmth to the moon's surface. The other could be friction from shifting tectonic plates, which generate heat, which becomes trapped inside the crust. Okay, open it up for rebuttal.
Rebutting Jessica's statement. In regards to the life on the meteorite, Daniel S. Golden, a NASA administrator, in a press conference on August 6, 1996, explained that the meteor that had landed 13,000 years ago, and they had found single-cell structures that resemble Earth bacteria. And other scientists have also said that the hollow pockets inside the meteorites found might contain gases or atmosphere, but the makeup is practically identical to Earth rocks. There are also some scientists that think that the tube-like structures cannot be in microscopic light because they are too small. That this meteorite is indeed a meteorite, you have to hold on to these facts. That the evidence, it has to be, you have to believe that this is a rock that is has in its originated from Mars, and the organic compounds
could have terrestrial origin and, like I said before, may have been contaminated during the 13,000 years when the rock was in the ice. And also that if it has Martian origin, further investigation has to be performed to find out if they have been formed in biological or non-biological processes, meaning that it could have been formed while in the ice time. Right. And in rebuttal of the colonization, there's only two ways of actual, first is terraforming, which you need to do ecopoiesis.
Okay, we're going to use our last 30-second thing, whatever you want to call it. We're going to talk, Jessica, you were just wondering, first, you talked about the terrestrial planet finder, and that's how we're, like, trying to find planets that we're actually going to another planet to live on, but that's being postponed, so that's kind of weird that's...
That's not being postponed according to NASA's website. Right. That's still in the works, and they're building it currently.
It's not postponed. It's indefinitely postponed.
According to our data.
Right.
Looking today at the NASA website, they said that the terrestrial finder is currently being, like, artists are doing their sketch and engineers are working on it now.
Okay. And then the second thing that I want to talk about was... if we do live on, like, another planet, like, who is going to... I wouldn't think that all, like, billion of us could go to a planet. Who are going to be the ones that go to the planet? Is it pretty much just going to be the rich people that can go, who can afford to go?
Maybe. What are you saying? Inequality distribution is going to prevent people from going? I mean, if we overpopulate the Earth and we exhaust our resources, they're going to be dead anyway. So, I'm sure you'll...
There's an option.
Yeah. So you can either start moving people in small groups and try and make the resources you have on Earth last longer, or you can just stay until the Earth is done and you have no options. Yeah. As a parent, I would like to plan for my child's future. I would like to have some place to put him in the event that his resources run out.
But then if you were to move people back and forth, you're talking about tens of thousands of launches, as perhaps millions in the long term, that would do significant damage to our ozone and possibly expedite the decline of our atmosphere.
But I'm not showing any damage to the ozone. Perchlorate is an issue for the water supply. It's not an issue for the ozone.
I mean, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And plutonium's not, it's not a contender. Only perchlorate is. Has that been 30 seconds?
Yeah, that's a little bit over, but we'll take one.
Okay, it's time for closing statements.
All right. My name is Nicole, and this is the Space Invaders. We are doing the closing statement now. It is human nature to want to conquer and to invade other territories because we do not want to feel vulnerable from the unknown. From our vanity and ignorance, we have left the world's problems to grow out of control. Our vain quest for knowledge does not only hurt the people in dire need, but we have looked up to the sky for answers to solve our own problems that we have caused on Earth. It won't be too long when space exploration will begin to resemble man's greediness to invade territories on Earth just for power. And in the midst of competing nations to become the first world nation in space, will we lose the most valuable resources we have on this Earth? Overpopulation, malnutrition, lack of education, and so on will continue to increase. And we will never solve these problems until we decide to firmly stand against the dissolution that our problems can be solved in space. From the billions of dollar programs spent in exploring space, how much money is actually used to cure cancer, AIDS, and drug abuse? How long will it take us to realize that we must fix the problems found on Earth before humankind can go into destruction? Human curiosity has led mankind to explore the depths of Earth, and we have looked up to the sky for answers to humans' existence. Our thirst for knowledge may seem to justify using our resources to further develop space programs, but I pose this question to you. Is your life more valuable than wires, computers, and machines? Is the life of a child more valuable than rockets and probes? Apparently, there are many who think so, who think the life of a person is far less valuable than the mere chance of life on a distant planet. It's a matter of choosing to humble ourselves and help those who cry out.
Okay, my name is Alma, and I am of Team Columbia, and I'm going to present our closing argument. Well, after all that's been presented, I just want to restate and sum up our points. First of all, I just want to mention that NASA's budget is only 2.5% of the federal spending, and this is large in dollar figures than it was in the past, that's true, but if you take into consideration inflation, it is not that much more than in the past. And like Julie said, most of the money that is coming from NASA is also going back into the communities for jobs and whatnot. And yes, there are a lot of problems that are here on Earth that we should try fixing first. But for one, there are plenty of bright ecologists, public health professionals, which, by the way, get $69.2 billion per year, and epidemiologists and other professionals that are already trying to fix these issues or these problems. And second, some of these solutions to some of these problems might be in outer space. And like Jessica said, and like Jessica said, the substances that are polluting the Earth, so trying to preserve the Earth now, are not all from space explorations. So when you look into our environmental situation, the main cause for pollution is air pollution and smog, and these effects come from people living in urban areas, not space explorations. And so space exploration is only having minimal effect on our environment compared to other things like vehicles in the cities and industrial developments. And not only are the effects of space explorations less than the other effects that we're doing to the planet ourselves, but the effects of space exploration being caused is ultimately going back to improve our living situations on the Earth and on our planet. Finally, I just want to say that we have only explored space for 45 years, and we have only stated that this is only the beginning of the chapter of space exploration in our history. Even though there are many problems on Earth, this should not stop us from learning about our surroundings. Lastly, the amount of money and the loss of lives going to space exploration might seem large to you, but in the long run, space exploration will save more money and lives.
I'd like to just point out a couple of things. First of all, towards the negative side, I just have a couple of points. I don't discourage space exploration from going forward. As a biologist and a researcher, I also encourage research to go forward with any type of research there is. But looking at the more economical and practical side, and also our country and the world in general, I don't see that it is very economical for our country to invest so much money into that side. First of all, I think that regarding pollution and everything, which is caused by a lot of the factories, motor vehicle and everything like that, we should invest more money into reusable resources such hydrogen gas as well as sugar production. I know in I know in Brazil right now they're using sugar as a base of reusable resources, and I don't understand. And also right now in the United States, we have also found hydrogen resources as a source for reusable resources. However, we haven't implemented that because it's not a demand that the consumer is asking for. The third thing I'd like to also state is that regarding population density mostly is right now in China, India, and Africa. Ours is probably maybe fourth. This is what I don't have hardcore evidence.
What
but,
was that?
So China, overpopulations right now crisis occurs right now. China's number one, India's number two, and Africa's number three. Most likely India is going to increase more than China. However, for our country's benefit, it's most likely not going to increase. And from what I've seen in the news, in the newspaper, there has been implements regarding population density to decrease the population density within the next 50 years. And for our generation, that is not our concern, but for our grandchildren, it's not their concern. It's probably most likely in the next 50, 60, even 100 year that it'll be a concern that population density would occur. But if we tackle population density, reusable resources, and all these other issues on Earth right now, in the future, our generation would not have to be concerned about having to move in outer space. But that, and at the same time, we should not disregard research in outer space because it's quite interesting. Okay, that's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a question?
Yeah.
Answers.
Yeah.
Answer.
Yeah.
Answer.
You guys,
I'd like to say something about how you said the sugar cane and stuff. I actually researched the 2007 fiscal year United States budget, and they're actually giving $21.1 billion to agriculture, and Health and Human Services is receiving $69.2 billion. So out of our measly $16.3 billion, you know, it seems like this space program is being put on, you know, the back burner, and all these other programs are given lots of money, but you have to keep funding NASA or else it's a waste of what it already is. You can't just say, okay, that's it, we're gonna get rid of the space program altogether. I mean, it'd be horrible for Boeing and Lockheed Martin and the people that, you know, survive off of NASA and all the other space technology.
Also, another point I wanted to note is you said that population density or population is growing in Africa, India, and China, and it's growing here too. But it's not, it doesn't matter that the fact that it's growing over there, nonetheless, they're using resources. Just because they're on the other side of the world doesn't mean it doesn't affect us. They're still using oil, they're using energy, they're using everything just as much as we do. And so instead of looking at it so centralized that America's problems, we need to look at it on a global perspective, or else we're not doing anything for anyone.
Absolutely. And that's kind of where I was going to go with that, is it's great to do research on natural resources. I think the point we're trying to make is we're almost out.
Yes.
There won't be any research left to do if you run out. And we're saying if you open up the space frontier, there just might be more out there, whether you bring them and ship them back or whether you take the humans to the resources. But you're going to have to open up another avenue because we're quickly exhausting what we have, and we're also polluting what
is left.
Might be used, right. So we have to go somewhere else, you know. When you're at groceries, you go to the store. You go somewhere else to get food.
Is there any more questions?
Yeah, there's a question.
My name is Guess. and one thing is, from the creation of NASA, one of the first reasons NASA was created was in response to the Cold War and the space race. And so when John F. Kennedy made his promise, oh, we're going to send a man to the moon, originally that was more for a military purpose, more so than for like necessity, out of running out of resources.
Well, it was out of necessity. The Americans thought it was out of necessity.
They were
scared.
That could be arguable.
Right. They had satellites and we didn't. And they were like, okay, so now the Russians can see us when we're taking a shower, but we can't see them. That's not fair. And so then they were like, okay, Mr. President, we need something.
I think it's all based on perception. I mean, necessity for certain people is security. Necessity for others is who have security and take advantage of it, you know, it's food. So.
Okay. But the fear of space exploration is that it could launch another Cold War type, especially with countries that are building in even like nuclear weapons, and it could just lead to another arms race. And okay,
no, that is very true. There is that fear that space exploration will eventually lead to some kind of international battle, like that we cannot control. But right now there is a space treaty among every nation that goes into space. That, like, there's, like, you know, the International Space Station is an international space station. Everybody's doing research for one purpose. So that problem, when space exploration takes off, like, further, there will have to be some kind of document or treaty. That's a fear, but it can definitely be resolved before it gets there.
Okay, that's true. But in the past, the United States hasn't held faithful to its treaties.
Yes.
So that's one problem.
But we've held faithful with the Russians since day one in the space. We've always helped them. We've rescued their cosmonauts. We've done all sorts of stuff to, you know, benefit Russia. And Russia was our biggest enemy in the Cold War.
There's hope.
That's just one fear that is that should be.
It shouldn't be another arms race, though, mm-hmm. because WMDs have been, well, supposedly they've been annihilated and wiped off the map, and we're not supposed to make anymore, and that's the treaty. And it's not just between us and the Russians, but it's between
the Japanese
people,
and
right, the our nuclear powers, too.
I just read an article that the Iranians had new technology for possible nuclear weapons.
They're not part of Any more questions?
Someone mentioned perchlorate. How do you pronounce it?
Perchlorate.
Yes.
Perchlorate. Do you want me to
give
the chemical?
Sure. Okay. Anyway, and
those
it was mentioned.
Arguing
not us. Oh, you guys. Oh, it's. It was mentioned that perchlorate was released into the atmosphere by military operations.
It's more of an issue for the water supply right now.
Oh, okay, so into the ocean.
Right.
Or into drinking water.
The Colorado River and, like, you know, in Florida we have an aquifer. I don't know what you guys call it here. Underground water source.
Is that the thing that was in Aaron Brockovich, perchlorate?
Yeah.
It was, right? Perchlorate?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, yeah. the argument about space exploration is that NASA is not, as a government, or as one of the agencies, governmental agencies, one can argue that it takes on military operations as well. And one of the reasons for the Columbia crash was because of the design of the shuttle. It had faulty design, basically. And one of the engineers pointed out that it was doomed to crash as it did because it was incapable of sustaining itself. And the reason for that was because they had to redesign the shuttle to allow for satellites for military use. And so it could be argued that is NASA really an agency of itself, or if it's just another military branch?
They might aid the military, but their purpose mm-hmm. is not one of military mission. I mean, they were created for space exploration. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is the military that exists as a separate entity is making the missiles and the, you know, and besides that, which I didn't get a chance to say, but perchlorate is used significantly in airbag inflators, nuclear reactors, electronic tubes, additives in lubricating oils, tanning and finishing leather, mordant for fabric and dyes, electroplating, aluminum refining and rubber manufacture, mordant for fabrics and dyes, and in production of paints and enamels. So there's actually other resources that we should be attacking besides NASA if we want to get rid of perchlorate.
You know, I have something to say about that, too. If NASA is helping the military, well, then public health is helping the military, and agriculture is helping the military, and the clothing industry is helping the military. So maybe we're all banding together, you know, to attack other countries. I mean, as a country, as a whole, we are going to help our own programs. That's what we do. We're a family here. So to say that it's a conspiracy or anything like that is just kind of silly in the sense that we do that every day with all the programs.
And then I also wanted to say something. Not only did the disaster from Columbia also help improve military equipment or whatever, but it also helped when NASA decided to send up the following shuttle. The exact same thing happened, and I don't know if you guys ever saw like the video clip that they were showing, that as soon as the disaster did happen, then they had the equipment to repair you know, the faulty equipment or whatever, they had the equipment to repair it so that it could be, like, a successful launch and that they could, you know, stay up there and, you know, do their mission and come back safely and land. So not only did it help the military, but it also helped, like, future missions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
Well, I have a comment. I don't think anyone here is totally 100% against space exploration.
I'm sure the government will continue to fund space exploration, but looking at the period in time that we're living in it and our generation, I don't think that economically speaking, for our government, NASA will be funded as much as it should be. Maybe in the future, but at this time point for our generation and how our economy is looking and how much we are so much consumed in other stuff, you know, areas or other facets that of research that NASA is not going to be funding as much, not getting as much funding as it should be. But you know,
I don't think we can predict that. I mean, we're not socialists, social people or whatever you call this. We don't know what our future holds. We don't know our peers' ideas and stuff. We just have to wait until.
What's your question?
I totally forgot my question.
Sorry, I
interrupted. No, it was just basically like.
Nobody disagrees to space
exploration. Yeah, no one disagrees and stuff like that. It's just, I mean, do we choose to put all this research into Mars and Jupiter and Pluto, who knows what, Lord, you know, whatever's out there, you know, or do we put this research into, say, hey, yeah, we have a problem, and yes, we learn from the technologies, the mistakes of the past, and stuff like that. Why don't we use those resources, that money, to make the problem better here? Why not? You know, why do we have to use it for space? Why don't we use it for ourselves here? Be a little, you know, greedy in what we make. And why don't we, you know, help ourselves, you know, with our resources and stuff like that? Because we are, as everyone said, our resources are being depleted. You know, why make, you know, something so we can see the beginning of the universe, instead of making something that could maybe help further along the hydrogen car?
I think it's short-sighted. Like short-sighted.
Although short-sighted, will it not help?
No, it would help. But I'm saying it's not that we're not on a mission helping every day, that there's not people out there doing the research that you're referring to, and that the affirmative side's been referring to the entire time.
When you think about it, it's 2.4% of what they take spending is going to space. So 2.4% is wasted. What's happening to the other 87.9%?
What you should be looking at is not at the government, but more on the consumer. If you can get the consumer to focus on space exploration, then I'm sure the government would be for space exploration.
The government
is for
space exploration.
Yes, I know.
More
for space exploration. But right now, not that much funding is going to space exploration because of the consumer, because of how Americans are viewing the issue of space exploration. They're not. Their everyday living is not. Oh, what's going to happen, you know, in Mars or something. Their everyday living is focused on gas prices is increasing right now today. Today, gas prices went up to $3.12.
Yes, but
they're not going to be considering space exploration if their mindset is,
but unless you discovered a new source of fuel out of space, and then they were like, okay, well now I see your point.
Yeah, but if you can convince them that, but more a majority of
Well, then it's all down to education.
It's down to education.
It's down to education and awareness.
$2.5 billion to give each child education a year.
Okay. But the thing is,
and nobody's doing that either.
We have $2.5 billion in our budget right now. We have $2.5 billion that goes wasted within government corruption every day.
You know
right,
that,
but
how the funding? It's like 49% of our federal budget goes to military, and how many people are against the war, and we're still providing 50% of our budget to the military. I mean, that statement, it just doesn't make sense. It's not up to the people. It's up to the politicians.
It's also been opened up for commercial.
For, you know, and President Bush doesn't make decisions because he feels like it. He makes them based on the interests of the United States. Right. He has to help us. And we're not all knowledgeable on everything going on to be able to make a decision ourselves. We don't know all the facts, so we have to trust that these politicians know what they're doing and they're allocating the funds correctly for us.
And also the fact that space exploration has actually been opened up to the commercial industry. I think somebody had mentioned that.
Yeah,
on the side,
that.
It's been opened up to the commercial industry, and
for
the
funding.
First successful space flight was, 2 years ago, and the guy sent his first spacecraft.
Yeah.
And then they're also looking to establish another space station. I shouldn't say space station, but like another NASA kind of flight center in New Mexico, which will be commercially owned. It will not be government funded. So it's quite possible that everybody wins and everybody gets what they want if it becomes a commercial industry, because then your government money won't be going to...
Well, Boeing and Lockheed, they're not government agencies. They're private.
But they do benefit from the budget, so, yeah.
Okay. But they also benefit from Verizon Wireless and Singular and all those people who pay them $50 to $120 million per satellite that's launched into space for them.
Sure.
And there's like 23,000 satellites in space.
Yep, which is cool.
we're done.
I think we're done.
All right.
Hi, Ken.
Can I stop this?
Yeah.